Hello and welcome. It is World Press Freedom Day, and we're devoting this episode of Quadriga to assessing how well journalists the world over are able to do their job, which, of course, is nothing less than telling the truth. And let me start out by saying the news isn't good. Right here at DW, our colleagues are calling attention to rising repression. They're posting images of the Turkish publicists and brothers Ahmed and Mehmet Altan, of the Chinese editor Ding Lijian, of the Saudi blogger Ralph Badawi, names and faces that stand for hundreds more journalists worldwide who face detention and torture for critical reporting. And putting the lie to the notion that Europe is an island of press freedom, journalists are being murdered here as well. So that is deeply disturbing, of course, to all of us who work in the media business. But what does it mean to you, dear viewers? In the age of social media and citizen journalists, does a free press really matter? Journalists under fire. Who cares? That's our topic here on Quadriga. And here are our guests. It's a pleasure to welcome Antje Bauer. She is a freelance journalist in her work, training for the DW Academy. She travels to regions like the Middle East. She says not only are journalists being killed, truth is killed in times of alternative facts. What remains are attitudes and prejudices. And we're very pleased to have with us on the show Vladimir Esipov. He has worked in Russia for the Axel Springer Publishing Group and is now based in Germany working for DW's Russian language programming. He says the authoritarian states do not really need to kill journalists. They have much more sophisticated instruments to bring the media under their control. And finally, it is a pleasure to welcome Xi Ming. He is a freelance journalist born and raised in Beijing. He left China in the late 1980s and worked in Germany since then. And he says the boundaries between journalists and non-journalists are blurring, which makes it more difficult to protect press freedom. So a warm welcome to all of you. The World Press Freedom Index, published last week by the organization Reporters Without Borders, reflects what it calls a worldwide decline characterized by, quote, hatred of journalism. So I'd like to start out by asking all three of you to reflect a little bit on your own experience and whether you would say it corroborates that finding, a finding of rising hatred of journalism. Are you seeing that in the form of threats or other risks to telling the truth?
I remember a quote of a Russian press minister a couple of years ago, maybe 2014, and he said it's a good thing to get as much journalist jobless as possible, because it will be rise the competition among the journalism. So that was a goal of the Russian state at the time, to get as much journalism out of their job. And it's obviously part of the decline of the press freedom in Russia.
Antje Bauer, your work in Europe, of course, as well, but particularly I know that you travel to the Middle East, you train Middle Eastern journalism. Would you say they are facing that kind of rising animosity?
Yes, I think they are squeezed between two walls of animosity. One is the animosity by governments, as long as they do their job as they should do it. And on the other hand, is mistrust by the people who don't share their ideas. They think that journalists who write things which are not in agreement with their own opinions are biased. So they have this double problem. One hand, the authorities which are against them, and a rise in mistrust from the people for whom they work in the end.
Thank you very much. A phenomenon, of course, that we've seen in the U.S. with the rise of polarization, and we'll come back to that in just a moment. And for you, Xi Ming, when you look especially at China, would you say that you see this active hostility toward journalism that the Press and Freedom Index is reporting?
No, I think it is a very complex. On the one hand, the mistrust is increasing, but not just against journalists, but against the media in general, because all of the media are under control of the state, and the state bans everything else. And most Chinese are not relying on this media at all. They switch to social media, where they don't know who is really journalist and who isn't a journalist. And they sometimes mistrust somebody, but they don't say, we just mistrust journalists. They mistrust it because they don't know who is that behind. Some news, some assessment, some judgment, some opinions, they just don't know.
So Reporters Without Borders, the organization that puts out the Press Freedom Index, they also say, quote unquote, hatred of journalism is actively threatening democracies. All of you are now based here in a democracy. You live and work in Europe. Would you say that that is true, or is it perhaps a bit hyped?
I think that the Russian assault on the press freedom in Russia, it's a part of the broader assault on the democracy on itself, because press freedom or freedom of speech is a crucial part of the globalization, and we are facing the assault on globalization itself, because it's not only about freedom of speech, it's about freedom of elections, about democracy in general. So obviously, yes.
And Chibawa?
Yes, I think it's the question is, what does it mean, freedom of speech? Freedom of speech means that people are allowed to know what's going on. In the moment that freedom of speech is threatened or doesn't work anymore, people see only a very small part of reality, a part which is being wished for by those who prevent them from speaking out. And so that means that people can't decide anymore on what they want, because they are manipulated.
Well, we're deciding on a very small piece of information, getting via Twitter, and then things like the American elections happening, because people are free in the country with a free press like U.S., but the result is very interesting.
Essentially, Ximing, it's a question of whether we see journalism and the media as an active part of a democratic system. Is it, sometimes we have liked to call ourselves the fourth estate, a pillar of democracy. Do you think that is still the case in the eyes of people beyond the media themselves?
Oh, yes. We can split the journalism in three categories. First, information. Second, assessment. And third, discussion. So the information. If you don't get the information you wish to have, you are very upset. You get a feeling that someone is going to happen, but you don't know what is going to happen. So some incidents in environmental context, some war, some conflicts, and so on. So you just don't have the information. So people who spread this information, whether they are journalists or not, are welcome in general, but are also mistrusted, whether they're spreading real information. Second is assessment. Not everyone is able to assess a situation, assess information they are receiving. So, and the third is discussion, whether you could invite people to attending some discussion. And in all three terms, the journalism is a crucial part. I don't say it is the only part, but it is very, very crucial. They does not replace anything else, but they generate, they vitalize all three categories. Then I think every democracy is depending on these three pillars of interaction among people. Without it, it won't work.
I think that many of us here in Europe would take an active free press for granted, would say, well, it can't happen here. But the fact is, interestingly enough, the Press Freedom Index of Reporters Without Borders says that it is in Europe itself where the decline in press freedom has been worst. Let's take a look at two particularly notorious cases.
Malta, October 2017. A car bomb killed Maltese journalist Daphne Caruana Galizia. Her investigative reporting had uncovered several cases of corruption in the Mediterranean country. Despite massive protests, her murder remains unsolved. But other journalists are continuing her investigations. Slovakia. In late February, investigative journalist Jan Kuciak and his partner Martina Kuznirova were murdered. Kuciak had reported on organized crime by Slovakian politicians. Protests here at least resulted in the resignation of Prime Minister Robert Fico. Murders of journalists right in Europe. Extreme cases of the threat to press freedom in Western democracies. According to Reporters Without Borders, the press is coming under increasing pressure in Eastern European countries such as Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic. Is Europe becoming a crisis zone for journalists?
And let me put that question to Antje Bauer. And that's, by the way, not our formulation, but in fact, the formulation of Reporters Without Borders, which refers to a continent in crisis. Again, hype or reality, would you say, looking at Europe?
I think in Europe there's a very negative development and a very dangerous development towards intimidation of journalists, towards annihilation of independent media by several means, by economic means, by political means. And I think this goes together with very worrying political developments. That is what we said before, that it goes hand in hand. We have in several countries, we have a very clear tendency to autocratic regimes, where the regime on one hand is trying to limit individual freedoms, citizens' freedoms more and more, and the limitation of free press is a part of it.
Vladimir Isipov, repression and persecution of journalists are often seen as being associated with war, with autocracy. But I was struck by the connection in those two cases that we just saw with corruption. Both of the reporters who were murdered were investigating forms of corruption and, in fact, state capture. Tell us something about that nexus. And is that also part of the phenomenon we've seen in Russia?
No, Russian government have other instruments to control the press. It's not about killing journalists in general. So,
but just the nexus between corruption and repression of the press.
Pardon?
The nexus between corruption and repression of the press.
Of course, every political regime sees danger in the critical press, especially in countries which no strong tradition of the critical press, like Germany or Eastern Europe or Russia, is very, very aggressive towards critical journalism. So they are trying to silence them by all means and trying to put them out of business, as happened with Axel Springer in Russia a couple of years ago. The new Russian law was forbidding the foreign investment in the media business, so Axel Springer and other foreign companies were pushed out of Russia by very soft means, so no repression itself, but they were pushed to sell this business to the Russian partners. So it's a kind of state-controlled control of their media landscape.
Ximing, would you also say that having had experience with other systems at other countries, that Europe has a real problem here? Or would you say, actually, this does still remain an island of press freedom in comparison?
No, Europe cannot stay out of this general trends. We see also some psychological effect of a journalism which was criticized very critically by the economy. If this journalism in Europe, in Germany, is dealing critically with China, the economy say, oh, please don't report that negatively because we need that just business. Mm-hmm. So it works. It works upon the politics. It works upon journalists. It works upon universities. We now see the influencing efforts from the Chinese government through the media, through the university, through the journalists. Mm-hmm. So I think it is illusion to regard any part of the world as island of freedom of press and so on. The globalization has reached every corner in every terms, also in terms of press freedom. But it can also be the other case in the other direction. I just told this. This is not a joke. This is a reality. For a few days, a Chinese social media blogger has discovered one picture, just one picture. This picture was spread by state media, and he checked this picture through VPN beyond China's boundary, and he found out that this picture spread by Chinese state media was fake, and he posted another picture to prove that, and that triggers a wave of discussion on Chinese social media and discredit Chinese state media, so that the spokesman of Chinese defense minister has to appear for the press and say, I'm sorry, it's just a fake. This case shows that we should not only talk about the negative influences upon this very widespreading journalism done by almost everyone, we should also see the hope that they could be represented.
But how hopeful can you be when you see that the Chinese regime is now cracking down on social media as well, absolutely tightening its grip on social media?
I simply don't believe that they can, because within the government, there are so many conflicting interests. Every ministry wish to bring their information, their truth. They utterly conflicts with the other ministry. Every party organization in the one provinces conflict the other party organization. Part of the journalism on Chinese social media was supported by just this conflicting parties within the ruling party, within the government. We are living in a world where you might be able to shut down all the media, but you cannot shut down all the interests.
But of course, what you can do, and what we have seen done, as you just described it, but we have certainly seen it elsewhere as well, is set up a concept of alternative truths that discredits the truth itself. I checked the Trump Twitter archive this morning and discovered that Trump has tweeted about fake news no less than 194 times since he won the election. He has referred to reporters as enemies of the people. Is this just Trump being Trump, or is he in fact absolutely undermining a free press? Let's take a look.
Go ahead. No, not you. Not you. Your organization's terrible. Your organization's terrible. Let's go. Go ahead. Quiet. Go ahead. She's asking a question. Don't be rude. No, I'm not going to give you a question. You are fake news. Go ahead.
Antjepar, couldn't you say, okay, it's just Trump being Trump. Being rude to critics has a long-standing tradition amongst politicians, and he's simply doing it his own way.
Yeah, he is doing it his own way, and politicians always have been lying. That's normal. But he is... He's a new model in this. He does it much more, and he is not only himself on Twitter. He has his whole stuff. We remember his speaker who talked about alternative facts. That means somehow he states an example for something being more and more spread and more recognized. So we have alternative facts. That means we have our narrative. It's not about truth anymore. It's the question, how do I present reality? And this reality is as true as your reality, even if they conflict. That means that you completely take the roots of what should be facts. It becomes, everything becomes opinion and conviction. And this is new. And this, I see it as a very... very dangerous development. Coming back to what you said, that the limit or the distinction between professional journalism and citizen journalism is being blurred more and more. That means everybody can create so-called truth.
This is what's happening in Russia. You don't need to suppress the real press. You don't need to suppress or to suppress journalism. You're creating a completely new reality with fake news or with alternative news, with creation of completely new reality via social media. So the people don't trust the classical TV or classical press anymore. They're switching to the complete new reality and staying there. So,
we saw that happen, didn't we, with the Skripal attacks, where suddenly the Russian government had about 8 different possible explanations that all contradicted each other. But the point was precisely to set up that kind of system of alternative truths.
So we saw it's very, very good during the crisis in the Ukraine 2013 and 2014, as the news popped up in the Western media as well, which were not real news, but the fake news founded by the Russian propaganda machine.
Coming back to the second part of our title, we asked, who cares? Ximing, fact-checkers continually disprove not only President Trump's claims, but those of Vladimir Putin and those of other strong men. And yet, it seems like that doesn't generate all that much outrage.
No, I wouldn't say that. I think the outrage are being differently channeled. For example, if you observe Chinese social media, almost every statement of state media was questioned. Almost every. So if Chinese state media say our economy is running well, some of the social media says, no. This figure, that figure. You don't know whether the figure fit the reality, but you know that people disapprove. And even President Xi Jinping, he is a very mighty figure. And he is compared with Winnie the Pooh. And all the Chinese media was shut down, whoever dared to posting a Winnie the Pooh picture. But the Winnie the Pooh are spreading all over the Chinese social media in every shape. So I don't think that people don't generally take care of what really is important to them, to their daily life, how they are feeling, whether someone is going to kill them or to do some harms to them. They care quite a lot, but they don't care in the form we are used to know. So some of the classic journalists put too much attention to the classic newspapers, to the televisions and so on. And now it is the difficulty to figure out how important the social media and the other alternative forms, I don't say they are correct, how important they are becoming for measuring the real mood within the country.
Antje Bauer, how would you assess the role of social media in a country like Germany? Some people here feel that there is a stronger basis of trust in political institutions and in journalism than there would be in a country like the U.S., for example. On the other hand, we have the far right using social media to spread the notion of a Lügenpresse, a lying press. So it can cut both ways, can't it?
Yes. I think that in Germany, the trust in classical media is bigger than in other parts, than in dictatorships, for example, like the one you said, or Iran, Egypt. People will not trust the classical media because they consider, rightly so, that they are not depicting reality. I think the question is how you use social media. The question is, like you already said, that you don't know very often who is saying what on social media. You don't really know the author. You don't really know, is it right what they say or not, whose interests are they representing. So I think that's the problem. But if we wish or not, I think classical media have to transform themselves and go on social media in order to remain visible.
Coming back just very briefly to our title, we're almost out of time, but Vladimir, in the face of journalism under fire, What can we all do? Not only the press, but what can others do?
We need to wake up to the new reality, to the new technological reality, and to recognize the fact that with the iPhone, everyone is a publisher, everyone is a journalist, and we have to push more effort into the new social media. So we have to fight the fights of the enemies of the press freedom with their own means.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all of you for being with us, and thanks to you out there for tuning in. See you soon.